in the Bible, it says that we weep with those who weep and we rejoice with those who rejoice. And I know that we have time to mourn, and I know it may say, like, weeping may endure for a night, but joy will come in the morning. It doesn't mean literally for one night. Today's been a hard day for me. I've spent most of the time, I mention my mum's name and I'm just in tears. But regardless, when music comes on, we can put on the dancing shoes and we can still dance. I think the beauty of dancing is that it allows you to let down your inhibitions, allow the body to move, and it kind of just resets the nervous system and lets you know that you're safe. I'm Jenny Russell. Welcome to Her Health and Happiness right here on UK Health Radio, your only real feel-good radio station, available on podcasts, available on Alexa, on Android, on iOS, whichever way you get your media. Literally every area of health we cover. How you doing? And despite the tears that have been flowing all day, I still hope, like me, that you do remember, regardless of where you find yourself, that you are still blessed and divinely favored. You are the magnet for miracles. You are the solution to someone's problem. And you definitely don't even realize you're the answer to many people's prayers. Promoting alcoholism. your drink could be anything it wants to be. But remember, Her Health and Happiness is a show dedicated to all aspects of female intimate health and the whole person. And this week I was blessed speaking to a lady named Vanessa Hebditch, and from Liver UK. And whilst you may think, well, okay, what's the liver got to do with my intimate health? The liver is about the biggest detox pathway. And if our digestive system, which is the mother system of the body, doesn't work, and then our detoxification pathway is inhibited, our hormones are thrown out. And if our hormones are thrown out, reproductive and intimate health is in big trouble. I did this interview earlier on today, and whilst I was waiting for it to come through, I'm thinking, why are these people, you do these interviews and sometimes they take the longest time to send it through to you. So now I'm recording this late when I should be going to my bed. But you know what? I'm recording it. And at one point I was like, okay, it's not coming. I'm going to do something different. And what came to my head, because it's such an interesting conversation we had today, but what came to my head was this, you know, when we label symptoms, we stop looking at causes. And it's not about blaming people, because you'll hear me talk about this. You know, I think what it's really about us being able to understand that, you know, we're looking at, it's not about medication versus lifestyle either. It's really more about management versus understanding. And it's really for us to be able to, you know, look at this bigger question that a lot of us associate with aging. You know, is it actually aging that creates these issues? Or is it an accumulation of decades of habits? Because we talk about patterns, we talk about habits. We talk about, and I mentioned about labels and symptoms. But once we label everything and give everything a label, anything that we can label allows us an opportunity to medicate. And if we allow ourselves an opportunity to medicate a condition, then we take away from most people the education or the understanding of the role we play in the position we find ourselves in. It's not intentional and it's not blame. Nobody intentionally goes out to destroy their health. But we have this juxtaposition between maintaining where we are via medication because we've given our symptom a label versus understanding the implications long-term of the lack of nutrition in the food that we choose, the process of the foods that we choose, and the way in which we choose to cook it. So this makes a difference, right? Because I think really that one of the biggest myths that we tell ourselves is that we're getting older. I mean, it's true, we are getting older. But whilst age can certainly change our physiology, muscle mass will naturally decline at any age if we don't use it. It's the use it or lose it phenomenon, right? Bone density can reduce based on what we decide to take in. Recovery may take longer. This is true, right? Because they are real biological changes. But our age isn't the whole story. What we have to recognize is the lifestyle choices that we make have a massive influence on how those changes come about and how we experience those changes. So you can have two women of the same age who can have very different levels of strength, very different levels of mobility, metabolic health, and independence because of differences in their nutrition, in their activity, in the sleep quality, the times they go to bed, the stress, smoking, alcohol, and other lifelong habits. And this distinction is incredibly important because what it then tells you, like for women that have menopause, they, as we label them, menopause experiences, why is it one lady has that experience and another one doesn't? We talked about this last week. Why is it one lady leaks when she laughs and two others don't? They're the same age, but their history to that point will make a big difference to their psychology and their physiology. Their biochemical makeup is different based on not just how, based on how they were carried, how they came into the world, and how they've navigated through the world. First, when they were under the umbrella of their parents' care, and when they came out and went into independence. So before I bring this interview, I just wanted to just cover this slightly. So for me, I have this framework I've had for a long time. I've called it the three M's for a long time. And those three M's are menstruation, maternity, and menopause. They're not three isolated events. They're just one continuous hormonal story. Now, as I've mentioned, not every woman, will experience the three M's. But by the grace of God, as long as we live long enough, every woman that lives long enough will experience two. She will experience the first one, and she will experience the last one. Menstruation and menopause. Not every woman will experience maternity, but that's the difference, right? Many women may experience, you know, painful periods, heavy bleeding. They might experience, you know, PMS, PCOS, they have fibroids or endometriosis. They may have experienced those things years earlier. But the body has been communicating to them all the time. And so the body talks to us, it tells us things. But if we don't understand the messages the body's giving to us, then there's no way that we can actually adjust accordingly. We can't course correct or understand the hormonal imbalances that are coming. And a lot of the times those hormonal imbalances are coming because of digestion and then because of detoxification. Because the digestive system isn't working the way in which it should, and thus the detoxification system can't work the way it should. And so hormonal imbalance is inevitable. It's impossible to have hormonal balance if you have disharmony in your digestive system and your detoxification system. And so that's just the first lesson that we need to learn. And that alone makes you go, whoa, how does that work? How does that work? And once we can balance our hormones, we can balance our health. So in order for us to balance our hormones and balance our health, we have to balance our digestion. And we have to balance our detoxification. Let's play a trail Let's play the interview and come back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
The liver is a very important organ, but millions of us are still in the dark about who can be affected by liver disease and what can affect liver disease. So today I'm blessed to be speaking with Vanessa Hebditch. She is Head of Policy for Liver UK, and we are going to have a very interesting conversation. So, Vanessa, welcome to Her Health and Happiness.
Thank you. Great to be here.
That's good. So, what is the widespread misunderstanding around liver disease?
Well, I think Liver UK, which is the new name for the British Liver Trust and Children's Liver Disease Foundation, have conducted a survey. And I think the most striking finding is that not that most people have misconceptions about liver disease, but most people don't actually think about it at all. And it's actually one of the leading causes of premature death in the UK. The UK is facing a hidden liver disease crisis. Premature liver disease deaths have increased by 42% since 2001. And I think there's two drivers for that. The first one is the one that people tend to know about, which is alcohol. And we have a culture where, you know, many of us are drinking at a level that could cause our livers harm. But the other thing that people really don't seem to understand is that the other big risk factor that's driving that increase is being a bit overweight or having type 2 diabetes, those sort of metabolic type risk factors.
Right. And I think the metabolic risk factors are the big one, because obviously that's a big one for diabetes type 2. And so I think people put diseases into camps, don't they? So liver disease is a disease on its own over there. Diabetes is a disease on its own over there. You know, lung disease is a disease on its own over there. But actually everything exists within the one body, and one thing can impact other things.
Completely agree. And it's really important. And we hear that from, people who call our helpline. They get very frustrated when they're passed from pillar to post. And many of these conditions are interlinked. So it's really important that, for example, if you have already been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, that you do make sure that you get your liver checked out.
Mm. Okay, so that's a big one there, because the numbers of people, the numbers of children, particularly, that are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes is quite astonishing. One of the things I used to tell my clients all the time is that, you know, I think I say to some people when they look at, as you mentioned, alcohol, is that Coca-Cola. I say people can have liver disease quicker from Coca-Cola than from alcohol, because of the excess amounts of cans that they drink, and there's no association, you know, you don't get drunk on Coke. And the reason why I say this, Vanessa, is because I remember one of my best friends from secondary school lived on Coca-Cola.
Gosh, yeah.
Until her liver shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a lot of that, I mean, let's face it, we live in a bit of a obesogenic environment. Many of us, two-thirds of adults, and as you say, many children are now overweight. And you know, that sort of processed food culture, foods high in fat and salt and sugar, things like sugary drinks, can be really harmful to the liver. And so, you know, it's really important that people who are a little bit overweight or have type 2 diabetes, first of all, get checked out because liver disease usually doesn't have any symptoms. But also, just for everybody to really, really think about those sort of, you know, cutting back on some of those more harmful food products.
Yeah, this is where the fight now comes in. If we see those harmful food products as treats, which is how we describe them, how they've been described and labeled, then people think they're being deprived. And this has been my argument for food and for the word food and for the word diet for years. I've published a couple of books, and in my second book, I have an acronym for diet. And for me, the acronym for diet simply is difference in eating this, difference in eating that. Literally, there's only two ways to eat. You're either eating towards optimizing your well-being, or you're eating towards minimizing your well-being. So, you know, if we start to look at it from that perspective, then maybe in terms of the sugary drinks, the high refined carbohydrates, the highly processed foods, you know, we're going to start to look at them differently, because now we're thinking, okay, what am I doing when I'm eating these foods? What am I doing when I'm drinking these drinks?
I couldn't agree with you more. And often it's foods that you're not necessarily so aware. I think most people would know that things like Coca-Cola and sugary sweets and things are, you know, but there's also, you know, a lot of things like breakfast cereals are laden with sugar. So it really is, you know, I think it's actually quite difficult for people to sort of navigate the sort of food landscape, if you like. There's so many foods that do have a are highly processed now. We've created an environment. You know, if you'd have gone and looked at the high street 30 years ago, there would have been, you know, most people would have been thinner and would have been eating much more natural foods, you know, that were unprocessed and cooked from scratch. But with our busy lifestyles, I think that's become much more difficult to do. One of the things we would urge people to do is to really sort of check their liver disease risk. We've got a little really fun little tool on our website, which is liveruk.org. And then if you do /risk, you can fill in a little questionnaire and find out if you are at risk of liver disease. As I say, there aren't usually any symptoms in the early stages. At the moment, three quarters of people are diagnosed as an emergency, you know, coming into hospital in A&E and, you know, with advanced symptoms, at which point it's much too late and too late for any intervention. But if you can find out early, the liver's an amazing organ and it can actually rejuvenate and we can sort of halt the damage that's happened and sometimes even reverse it.
Well, that's really interesting. I think that's one of the things that we need to do. I think for people, you know, you mentioned earlier on that we have busy lifestyles. So because we have 24-hour TV, we have shops open 7 days a week. And so it's also for us to be able to stay still. But listen, recently, I mean, we've got all these busy lifestyles, we've got all these foods, but also the emotional load on the liver. We don't look at it from an emotional standpoint, and that also has an impact on the liver, and the fact that we're lacking in sleep. So even in terms of rejuvenation and repairing and refreshing and rebuilding and restoring, if we don't start to slow down, because nobody makes us follow these lifestyles, this fear of missing out is crazy. If we don't start to slow down, we will miss out because we just won't be here.
No, you make some really good points, and you know, I think as you say, but I think the liver is often, it's like the forgotten organ. People worry about cancer, they worry about heart disease, and they worry about stroke, but they don't necessarily think about their livers. And that's what our survey showed. It showed only 9% of people actively thought at all about their liver, despite it being the second leading cause of premature death. That's people in working age under the age of 65 in the UK. So it's affecting people who are relatively young and they might still, you know, be able to work and live full lives, you know, stopping people, you know, they might have just had their grandchildren. And we hear these stories every day on Liver UK's helpline.
So what, I mean, I know like you said, you know, the symptoms are silent. What kinds of symptoms do people get? Because I mean, I, you know, you there has to be something before the body completely shuts down. So what would be some of the silent symptoms that people may not associate? Because I know like with certain diseases and, you know, you may have, like if you have diarrhea for a set period of time, some people who have poor bowel habits all their lives won't associate that with anything wrong with their colon. They won't associate gut issues with their colon. So there must be something that people may have, little niggles or twiggles that they ignore, but wouldn't even necessarily think, you know.
So the first thing I would say is it often really is symptomless in the early stages. So if you are regularly drinking more than the government guidelines of 14 units of alcohol a week, and or you are overweight and have type 2 diabetes, I would strongly advise that you ask your GP to do a check. But the early stages symptoms, they can often be cute, confused for other things. So you might have something like you're feeling a little bit tired all the time, or just generally feeling unwell. You can be feeling a little nauseous, not sleeping properly. But of course, all those symptoms can be caused by so many other things as well that they're very difficult to pinpoint. What I would say is the later symptoms, when you've got advanced liver disease, that's things like vomiting blood, jaundice, that yellowing of the skin and yellowing of the eyes, feeling very confused because the liver damage can affect the brain, and that swelling in the tummy where you start to get a really big tummy, that's something called ascites. So those later stages are really red flags, and if you have any of those later stage symptoms, I would say go straight to the doctors immediately.
Okay, so yeah, that really does help, and I think people need to understand that. I think what's going to be hard for us now is that we've now labelled obesity as a disease, and so then, you know, if everything is labelled as a disease, what it is, it's a dis-ease in the body. But if we label it as a disease and we outsource the health all the time and we look for medical intervention, nobody's actually stopping to think, well, what's causing this disease? Nobody's taken any personal responsibility. And, you know, for me, you know, the agreement to these interviews is that I'm helping people to highlight one, you know, just understanding that literally once our organs stop working, we stop working. When one organ is under pressure, every other organ is under pressure because every other organ has to work harder to try and pick up the slack. But as you said, in the early stages, you have this and you may not see it, and it may get confused for other things. We've got, you know, brain fog is a menopause issue, but it can also be a menstrual issue or a maternal issue. Brain fog is the body way of telling you something's going on. If we keep putting labels on everything, then nobody's actually recognizing that the body's actually speaking and saying, look, maybe I need more water, I need more rest, I need to sit down, I need better food, I need, you know, we're not doing that. We're just saying, oh, it's my age, it's the menopause, oh, it is this, it's, and so we're not looking actually at, you know, what the body's actually trying to tell us. And so we end up in big problems.
No, I agree with you. I mean, the liver is an amazing organ, and it's got over 400 functions, and that includes fighting infections, helping digest foods, removing toxins, helping the body heal. So it is, I think that it's like the body's factory, and everything goes through it. But with your point about, I think one of the other things that we hear about is that there's a huge amount of stigma associated with liver disease, both types of liver disease, both alcohol and people who are overweight or have
Fatty
type
liver
2
disease, isn't it?
diabetes. And so, whilst I agree with you, I think we've got to be very careful about not blaming people. We've got to, you know, we've actually created an environment where we have a culture which is where alcohol is often the norm. Whatever you do, you're often, you know, you go to functions or, you know, Prosecco for brunch, or, you know, it's become very ingrained within our culture. And then the harmful food environment is also ingrained in our culture, and it's become, you know, part of everyday life. You know, there's chicken shop on the corner, on every street corner. You know, the food, the highly processed foods.
So
I think it's really important. I mean, it's fantastic that, you know, what you're doing to raise awareness. But I do think we have to be careful about blaming people. It's really about supporting people to make those changes in their life, and so that they can live healthier, you know, healthy lives.
No, I agree with you. I'm not blaming people.
No,
and what I'm saying is that people's awareness, it's taken away. When you know, you're saying that there people are not aware of issues around or things that can contribute to liver disease. If everything is given a label, people don't look for an awareness.
No.
They don't have to, because what we've done is we've created if we create a chemical or a medicine or medication for everything, then we can carry on doing what we're doing. So we're not aware of how we contribute to it. There's a difference there. That's not blaming anyone. That's about understanding the awareness. But that can be taught in schools.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree. We need much, much greater awareness, and we need to support people to show how actually it is. You know, things like building exercise into your life so that, you know, getting off the bus one stop earlier, or, you know, making sure that, you know, even just going for a 15-minute walk every single day. Lots of people don't do that. And it's similar with food. You know, there are simple things that you can do that can really cut down on those foods that are high in fat, high in salt and high in sugar. So I completely agree with you, Jenny.
But also, like, the cooking process. So you made a great point there, right, earlier on about busy lifestyles. Because we've got busy lifestyles, it's called convenience foods. So we found a way to conveniently get what we believe is nutritious into the body so that it fits around our lifestyle. So I think we've got to now kind of try and rewind the clock. At some point, we need to slow down. During lockdown, funny enough, it went two ways. Some people got really healthy and some people just got more unhealthy. But when the minute, you know, we all got locked away and everyone was going stir crazy and they were just eating and eating and eating. What I found amazing, I do all of this work as a living, and I had all these women I was working with. But I'd walk into Sainsbury's and I'm like, oh my God, there are fruits and vegetables galore everywhere. And then I walk around to the crisp store and I walk around to the alcohol and they were empty, and the biscuits. And I'm like, this is going to be a problem for us. And then we were let free. We were allowed to go out for a little bit. And all of a sudden, I live near a lovely country estate. And I've run marathons and we run there all the time. That place was never busy. And then when we were allowed out, when we were allowed out, so to speak, the place was packed and I was upset. I was like, people in my running, coming to my woods. But people actually started to go to the park. They started to go to the woods. They started to walk and they started to get that fresh air and they started to do things that they didn't do. Now, the park has never gone quiet since, but it's not quite as busy as it was, but it has never quietened down since. So in that respect, people actually realised, we can go out and walk. And some people have kept it up because they just really love it, and others have gone back to normal. So I think what's happened is it's almost as if we don't talk about lockdown anymore, and we don't talk about the importance of touch and communication. And, you know, that's what I realised when we were in lockdown. I was like, you know, the most powerful thing that you can do is touch someone. Because, you know, just one hand on someone's shoulder can change everything. But we weren't doing that. And now, so that's what I mean. Just those little things that we need to do and keep them up.
During lockdown, we actually saw huge increases in liver disease mortality. So people dying from liver disease. But the main reason, the main driver of that was actually alcohol. And so many people who, you know, maybe were drinking reasonably heavily before lockdown suddenly started drinking even more. And that
they were
really
stir crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And that caused a huge spike in liver disease deaths. And I think one of the things to mention as well is we've talked about those metabolic associated risk factors for liver disease, which many people aren't even aware of. A third of people in the UK had no idea. But the other big thing I would say is that for many people, the huge spike in the numbers of liver disease cases we're seeing is actually a combination of the two things. So it's people drinking a little bit more than they should, drinking out a little bit more alcohol than they should, and then they're also eating unhealthily and having those weight issues and got those metabolic issues. And that's giving the liver a double whammy that it just can't cope with.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. But that's what I'm saying. So now we've got to make changes. I think this is a very powerful interview because the point I was trying to make is not to knock people, but if we now classify liver disease as a, sorry, not liver disease, obesity as a disease, and then we give people something to maintain that, but we don't actually get them to address their lifestyle and understand, like you said, you're not trying to scare people. There are different diseases that we don't talk about, this being one of them. So once we have a conversation and say, look, like I specialize in intimate health. The abdominal wall, one of its roles is to help to hold our internal organs in their natural position. But the more that the abdominal wall is stretched and deconditioned and weakened, and the more we load and we cough and we sneeze and we have pressure inside what we call intra-abdominal pressure in the cavity, from internally plus externally from the loads that we lift or carry, then that pressure has the potential to make the organs drop down onto the reproductive organs, those to drop down and create instances for prolapse for women. So it's, obesity has a knock-on effect internally. It has an effect on not just on body confidence in terms of the physical aspect, but actually what happens in terms of reproductive health, what happens in terms of organ support. Again, what happens in terms of the liver load, because it's loaded with different things. So we need to start to have these conversations. So we start to understand if you maintain this position here, your risk for liver disease, organ prolapse, etc., increases. So we're not trying to knock someone for obesity, but understand that every part of your body has something to do. And like you said, the liver is a factory. It plays a massive role. We just think of it as one thing, but it's a major detoxifying system, and detoxification is crucial to health, digestive health, digestion, elimination. We need it. So we need to understand. Once we can have those conversations in school when we're teaching biology and physics and stuff, we can change the way people look at things.
Yeah,
And
no, I couldn't
we
agree
can help.
more. Raising awareness is critical, isn't
Definitely, definitely. Vanessa, I could talk to you all day.
It's
Any other
lovely
conversation?
to
So where can people go to get more information? Really, again, just talk very quickly
So
again about
if you're
that about the test they can do. Just explain that one more time.
If you're worried at all about whether or not you might have liver disease, or you've got any questions at all about liver disease, please visit our website. It's liveruk.org. And if you're worried about the risk factors, do /risk after that URL. And there's a lovely little quiz that you can do where you put in your own details. It's completely confidential, and that will give you your own personalized reading regarding your own risk.
Okay, that's absolutely fantastic. I'm going to get my sister to do it because I do have a sister who I've spoken about. She is actually getting help now for alcohol. She's not overweight, but she is getting help. And I think sometimes when she goes and has they have certain tests, I'm not sure what markers pick up what, but because the markers are saying that she's fine, I mean she's finally joined a group and doing something. But for a very long time, just before we lost my mum earlier this year, sadly, my biggest fear was that I was going to lose her first. And now she's getting help and she's doing measures and stuff, and she has made a difference to her change. But this has been an ongoing thing for over 10 years, so It's
Yeah,
not something.
that's amazing because it is, I think, often the first step, you know, having that sort some sort of acceptance that you do need some help and support. And again, it's the stigma. I think most people, you know, many of us across the UK are drinking at harmful levels or drinking too much, and it's actually sort of making that, you know, recognizing that. One of the very simple things that we try and tell everybody in terms of alcohol is, first of all, make sure that you have 3 continuous days off alcohol every week. And I know many people will say, of course I do that, but if you're drinking heavily or even if you're drinking every single day, then you are almost certainly drinking above the government guidelines and potentially putting your liver at harm.
Well, that's another conversation for another day.
Yeah.
But I think the thing was, it really was, it one of the things that was difficult was that, you know, we can all have a drink. So what she did was say, well, then you have to help me. So, and she lives with one of my other sisters. And so it was like, you know, they were this distinguishing between wine and spirits. And so then there was this whole argument going on there. Then the other one saying, well, why should I cut down? Well, the thing is, if you're living with an alcoholic, you can't turn around and say, you know, my drinking doesn't affect you. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, look, I can eat the cakes and biscuit because I'm slim, but you can't have them. It's silly. You're not that you're putting temptation in their way and you're not helping. So it's really recognizing that it's a team effort. And if that person, if you have to cut back to help that person cut back, actually you're helping yourself anyway. So it took a long time before we got to that point. So I do understand, and her late partner 10 years ago, 11 years ago, 11 years ago, died from alcohol poisoning. So this is a subject after my heart anyway.
But I'd love to come back on and talk about the alcohol side.
We can have a whole, if I ask Jonathan to give you my number, I'm happy for us to set up another one just to have a whole conversation about that. Because as I said, you know, how I may come across, people might think, God, she's such a cow. I'm being polite there. But I'm not. I'm just trying to say that we have to, you know, the thing is, at the end of the day, the NHS is under pressure. And it's under pressure because a lot of the issues that it's having to deal with are lifestyle-induced issues that we're being able to not have a responsibility for because something is there to save us. And then if we can start to have a responsibility for some of those things, we can take some of the pressure off the NHS and it can actually do what it was designed to do in the first place. But we will live a better life for it. Once we understand ourselves, you have to understand your job or you can't do it, right?
Absolutely.
So it's exactly the same thing. That's it. Vanessa.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
The station that makes you feel good.
I hope you found that insightful. And as I said, I'm really not blaming people. about anything. But at some point, somewhere along the line, even with the government, what happens is I did this program years ago, Just Like Me. And I looked at literally the connection or the concept of this marriage between words. And there's accountability and responsibility, you know, and just really understanding confidence, arrogance, just how close they come together and understanding. Lots of people want positions of authority, but they don't want the accountability that comes with it. We can't keep learning lessons on the same thing over and over, because it means that it's the same way a person being, you know, a poor steward of their finance or their health or whatever. We know what we're doing isn't going to help us, but we continue to do it anyway, and then we have a reason or we can justify. My friend says, you know, when you spend money, Russell, you always justify why you buy something. It doesn't mean that what I'm doing is correct. It just means I'm justifying it, but I'm not really helping myself. A diagnosis can be incredibly valuable for anything, right? Because it gives us an opportunity to get a name, possibly, for what we're experiencing. It can also help us to guide us towards the right treatment, and it can connect us with the right support. But what we need to understand is that once we have this label, which we shouldn't pin on ourselves really for many things, we shouldn't stop asking questions about what may also be contributing to the problem. Because we should be asking what's contributing. I mean, if we have an issue with our car, we have to ask ourselves what's contributing to what's wrong with the car. You know, if we're not driving it as well as we can do, we want to find out. If you're in a position at work and you're not getting the results you want for the company, you know, when you have an appraisal, they'll tell you the parts of your job that you're doing really good, but they'll tell you where you could improve. They'll highlight areas that you need to be aware of. It's the same for health. And so, you know, it's a balanced and clinical responsibility. Balance is the two things. I mean, for me, you know, obesity, as I mentioned in there, has been given a label, right? It's now recognized as a chronic disease by many organizations. And that has benefits, and it also helps to reduce the stigma. But what we need to make sure is that the conversation doesn't end there, and it doesn't justify the position for everybody. We need to make sure that everybody, you know, we recognize that everyone's story is different. Everybody's nutrition is different. Their sleep is different. Their movement patterns are different. The jobs they do are different. We need to recognize their stress levels will definitely be different. And so therefore, the impact of the medication will definitely be different based on those variables. The environment they're in, the hormones, all of these influences body weight and health. We have to recognize that all of those things influence body weight and health. Some people can take a medication and it works fantastically well for them, and it gets them where they need to be, and it puts them back on the right track, and it course corrects, and it's fantastic. Other people can take the same medication and it can make them really sick. It can be detrimental to their health. And a third category can take the same medication and nothing changes. So we know we're, you know, I say this every week, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. There's no one size fits all. And so therefore, there has to be a question around, what are we doing? We have to look at that. And I think sometimes when it comes to organ vitality, there are forgotten organs, right? The liver and the kidneys work continuously to process and eliminate waste products and every medication from the body. They have to work to eliminate the excess of the medication from the body. The digestive system, the mother system of the body, that is there to help us absorb the nutrients. And the liver is there to process the nutrients and metabolize the hormones and the medicines. And then we have to extract the nutrients and then feed the body with what's good. So if the digestive system is persistently disturbed, if then nutrition absorption is going to suffer. If our digestive system is always under pressure and is not working the way in which it should, then the nutrients that we want to garner from the food that we've eaten may be disrupted. We may get less than what we bargain for. if the liver function is impaired by disease, hormone metabolism can be affected. And that becomes massive for us. And that's why it's really important that looking at the whole person is crucial and not just the symptom. And that makes the treatment protocol so much more valuable and so much more beneficial to the patient. And that helps us to understand, because it's evidence-based. It's evidence-based not scientifically, but from the person themselves. And that's what helps, really. So, you know, next week Saturday, is the first online masterclass that's just purely £10. And I'm looking at menopause unpacked. And I'm looking at, you know, what can really help, what things haven't helped, or what, you know, what has brought us to where we are, and what will actually help us. And it's going to be an opportunity for us to really dive into what menopause is for everyone, because it's different for everybody. The word and the umbrella goes across. And the reason why we know this to be true is because not every single woman experiences hot flushes. And sometimes you're kind of looking and thinking, pff, pff, lucky cow, to the woman that doesn't have them. But her history and your history is different. The same for the woman that has or struggles with brain fog and can't remember. I mean, I didn't think nothing of it in perimenopause, but literally I'd lock my car, walk down the road and go, did I lock the car? Did I lock the car? And I'm literally wanting to walk back and thinking, did I lock the car? My mum used to say, where's my keys? Where's my phone? Where's my keys? Where's my phone? I've said this before. I never thought for a second that was brain fog. My friend Maggie, beautiful lady, who started running at the age of 40 and ended up running in the pen with Liz McColgan, for elite runners for marathons. She said, oh, well, the more fit you are, the later your menopause starts. No, mine started at 47, 48. You know, when I started to feel this heat, like I said to you before, in the middle of my back and between my legs, I'm like, what the heck is this? Everybody's menopause symptoms are totally different. My muscle density has gone down slightly, but nothing major. But what I give thanks for is that, you know, I had that whole history behind me of being, you know, a record holder and being Britain's fittest woman, being the ultra fit champion. So CrossFit came from ultra fit. And so, you know, pushing weights, lifting weights was literally the foundation of what I was doing. Understanding bodyweight exercises. So that has really carried me well. Using the Swiss ball for the last 26 years has really carried me well. And I understand strength training. I don't have the same strength I had when I was younger. But I do know that I can still lift some weights relative to where I find myself today. And that makes a massive difference. But if you go onto my Instagram and you look at my Instagram, at Pelvic Secrets, you will find in the top, Fit and Fabulous After 50, Menopause Unpacked, what you need to know about the menopause and what can help you. And that's going to be quite a powerful conversation. Next week's interview is going to be amazing. I'm not talking about it right now, but just let's put it this way. This lady is phenomenal. And I'm just beyond blessed to have the opportunity to speak to her. I've waited for over a year to do this. And it will really empower many, many women. We've got to start recognizing our own ability in being powerful conduits to help others. So when I say at the top of the show that you are blessed and divinely favored, a magnet for miracles, the solution to someone's problem and the answer to somebody's prayer, that's where we find ourselves. A friend of mine, I've got a few friends at the moment who are not well. I'm looking at our generation, my generation, and knowing that many of us, even for us as colour, have been guinea pigs for a lot of the pharmaceutical stuff. It's time for us to take back control of our health. We can't keep outsourcing it. We have to ask questions and we have to invest into our health. if we are willing to buy new cars and bags, and those things are really fantastic, but without the health and vitality, they are of little consequence. Sometimes we have to push back. Sometimes your health is your business. Sometimes we just have to put our hands in our pocket and understand that science doesn't always have the answer. And science is based on probabilities, and those probabilities can change all the time. Holistic well-being is also based on probabilities. The probability that if you make the right changes and change the right habits, you will have a different outcome. That's all we're saying. And that's all we're hoping for you. And we're just asking you to take that opportunity to actually understand yourself better. You understand yourself better, you can look after yourself better. You can heal yourself, because we are fearfully and wonderfully made. We were designed for signs and wonders. And my time is up. Until next week in health and happiness, stay blessed, stay safe, stay well. Jenny Russell, Facebook, LinkedIn, @Pelvic Secrets, TikTok, Instagram. See you there.